domain driven design gives a language, a ready to use language, to focus on the difference between cost and value. Cost, the solution, value, the problem. Customers want value. So the customer wants a problem to be solved. He or she doesn't want a solution. To be effective under pressure in this situation, you need to have interiorized a language that makes you able to speak between technical and business people. And the domain-driven design provides it.
Welcome to the API the Docs podcast. My name is Laura Wash, and I am the host to this episode. And today I have a guest who, similarly to our last guest, also wrote a love letter, well, an ode to writing, and technical writing at that, and wrote about the powers that writers hold in creating the narratives and stories, and how much these stories hold our attention and how much power it holds in the importance of language, building language as a tool for that. So I think a lot of you are going to know our guest today. Let me welcome Luca Vettor to the podcast. Welcome, welcome, and thank you for coming.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be there.
Mutually. So I'm assuming that a lot of our listeners know you because of the blog that you write on Medium. And I really love your articles. I wish Medium didn't have the restriction of how many I can read in a month. And in January, if I'm not mistaken, you were writing one that specifically was very, very much to the topic of API documentation technical writers. And it was about domain-driven design and why you think that that is the language that might solve all problems for technical writers. And they should definitely pay attention and pick it up and learn it and use it. But before we go into that, and since then you have, and before that also, you have written a lot. In that one, you're talking about yourself as a technical writer. But since then, I see that you more identify as an information architect. And actually on that Medium blog on your self-introduction, you are writing about a riveting way how you arrived to calling yourself a writer and a technical writer. So I would like to ask you first about that because you have such an interesting career path.
It's a pleasure to speak about that. Yes, because my career started in 2000, and probably you remember it was the age of the dot-com companies. You certainly remember how things ran. I was at the time a recent graduate in physics and got into the econophysics business. I intuited that it was an unstable business and shifted my attention to the software development. It was love at first sight, definitely. I spent around 10 years developing software, first in finance and then in the sport industry, where I still am. It was the realm of the problem solving, as I wrote in Medium, and I love solve problems. However, over time, I realized that I love avoiding problems more. So I became interested in project management because my experience told me that that was the area to work in to prevent recurring problems. That was my intention. But after interpreting various project management roles and even approaches over about 8 years, I realized that there were recurring problems in this area as well, and not due to the specific business or technology. So I turned my attention and studies to the earth of what I became convinced was the context in which many problems arise, and that's communication. And that led me to the domain-driven design, because as a technical writer, I am in the middle between technical people and business people. They often struggle to understand each other. And that's the root cause, at least in my experience, in my 20 years experience, that's the root cause of all the problems. It's also the source of what I used to call, but it's not only me that calls it in this way, induced complexity. Mm-hmm. You probably heard people listen to people saying how complex this is. It's not possible to explain in a simple way. This is a psychological defense when you are not able to fully understand, to deeply understand the topic. And in many cases, this is a language problem because you don't have words to express that problem. When I discovered the domain-driven design, I've discovered an already solved problem because it's all there, the formulation of the problem and also the solution. And when you approach domain-driven design, it sounds common sense. Mm-hmm. Because it's obvious. Problem and solution are different things. They have different dynamics. But surprise, surprise, I wrote an article on Medium titled The Difference Between Problem and Solutions. Mm-hmm. I had more than 2,000 views. It got distributed by Medium. I was surprised about the interest of people about a statement that is obvious. Problem and solution mm-hmm. are different. What is not clear to many people is that any kind of solution, even the best one in the world, is a cost. And as a cost, it must be reduced. The problem brings value on the table. And that's the main difference that, surprisingly, many people, even high-level managers, don't get.
Because common sense would say it's the other way around, but it's not. Or at least that's how we learn, right? That the question is given and the answer is what the value lies in, but what you're saying is the opposite.
Exactly. It's like agile methodologies that are very popular in the software industry, Scrum, Kanban, and so on, methodologies to organize projects. If you look at the principles of such methodologies, it's nothing more than common sense, like you have to know your customer to deliver him or her value. You have to get feedback from your customer to be sure to deliver value to the customer. If you listen to these sentences, they are obvious, but at the same time, they are the most difficult to put in practice.
Yes.
And the domain-driven design gives a language, a ready-to-use language, to focus on the difference between cost and value. Cost, the solution, value, the problem. Mm-hmm. Customers want value. So what the customer wants a problem to be solved. He or she doesn't want a solution. It seems that I'm playing with words.
No, you're not. Yeah, I fully agree with you.
When you plan a project and you focus on solution, you mainly waste the most part of your time and your resources. And that's why I'm writing about domain-driven design. First, to learn, because when I learn a new topic, it's extremely useful and helpful to write about it. Second, because the Medium community is fantastic. Because you can get in touch with people that agree and people that disagree. Mm-hmm. In both cases, feedback are extremely useful as a learning tool, because when I get confirmation, I know I'm learning properly, I'm learning right. When I get objections, I try to answer, and from the discussion, I learn something more. And what I'm learning is that what often I consider obvious, like the difference between solution and problem, is not. And the main objection I received is that in an ideal world, problem and solution are fully distinguishable when you work with high-level people. But when you work with normal people, that's not true. Why? Because of the pressure. Under pressure, when you have a strict deadline, when you have to deliver something for yesterday, it's psychologically too hard to sit down and analyze the problem. You want the solution because this is what you are going to deliver to your client. That's a mistake, but psychologically, you are in a rush.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But even in the ER, they do triage first.
Yeah, but it's life. In the end, I think we are so used to interact with machines that at a certain point, we think we behave like machines. But we are not. We are still human, even if we are in front of a smartphone 24 hours a day. And we are not software that can execute commands at the maximum possible speed of the hardware when it runs. We are human. So when we are in rush, even the most obvious distinctions fall apart. So we focus on the solution and we forget the problem. And it's possible that when you arrive to your client, and you deliver your solution, the client says, that's good, but that's not what I want. That's not what I need, because I need to solve my problem. You didn't solve it. You forget the problem while you were trying to solve it. And this, again, is psychologically comprehensible. I think that any developer, after some years of experience, well knows that technology has its own dynamics, even mm-hmm. psychological dynamics. So when you start developing software, you are in front of software as if you were in front of another people with their needs. So your attention becomes tunnel focused on the needs of the software that has been built in abstract, not for your specific business. If you are in the sport business, for example, you use an enormous stack of technologies that were not thought to solve the sport business, but just to solve logical problems. You have to put all that together to solve problems of your client that are specific. In this moving from abstraction of the technology to the concrete of the specific need of your client, it's so easy, surprisingly, to forget that the problem brings the value, because all your effort is in understanding the solution.
Let me backpedal a little bit from domain-driven design itself to, you mentioned induced complexity, and you also mentioned that domain-driven design as a methodology finds agreement, but also disagreement, because at first it seems that it can only be properly in its full spirit applied in an ideal situation, because problem and solutions may overlap in an emergency situation or under pressure, which I don't fully disagree with, but there's this other problem, complexity, which exists. And events are not always linearly following each other. They influence each other. The solution influences the problem. The problem influences the next problem. You write about your view on having intrinsic complexity and induced complexity. And you did talk about induced complexity, but what about the intrinsic complexity and the promise of domain-driven design?
The crucial point about the intrinsic complexity is to define it. I think that the Kinefin framework allows to have the best definition in the world, because it says when the relationship between cause and effect are not known, in that case, your system is complex.
So enter a human anywhere, you have a complex system. So you have an example that doesn't have humans, so it's not a humans that induce complexity? You mentioned the weather.
But also the market. The market sometimes behaves like the weather, because when you conceive a product, you build it, you deliver it to the market, you have no certainties about the response of your customers. When Steve Jobs presented the iPhone, he had no certainties about the success of the iPhone in the future. He had a vision, but without any kind of certainties. That's complexity. Cause, I put a product on the market. Effect, customers will love it. The connection between the two is not at all predetermined. That's complex. That's the intrinsic complexity. Something you cannot in any way know beforehand. That the distinction between complexity and complication. Something complicated just need an expert to be solved, because it's just difficult, but knowledge is there. You just have to understand how it works. Driving airplane is complicated, not complex, because if you put in place best practices, all instruction you have to put in place, the airplane in most of the cases will do what you want. There are accidents for sure, but these are exceptions. It's deterministic. You steer and the airplane behaves like you want if there are no incident and so on. That's what is called complicated. If you have to drive an airplane, you need a pilot, because the pilot has been trained to do this complicated stuff. That's not complex.
My personal experience only is that we are addicted to complicated, to the point that we deny complexity even when it's staring at us. I mean, global warming is the best example of that. Part of this is that we simply don't have the language or the mental models to deal with it. And part of it is this pervasive thing that the more I look at real complex problems, it becomes this mesmerizing abyss. That's just, it's lovely to look at, but which thread do you even pull? And you were talking about products put to market and a complex environment. Now, technical writers, information architects, technologists operate in this space together with other people and all of our shortcomings and strengths. How did you find your peace with this once you, I do assume that you had your own internal fight with recognizing complexity and understanding the devilish natures of it.
It helps, again, the domain-driven design approach, because when we face a problem, we need a model to think about the problem. And it's extremely important, the awareness that every model is wrong, because it's just a facet of the reality. So based on the model you use to face a problem, even the intrinsic complexity changes, because as much as the model allows simplifying the way you formulate the problem, and here we arrive to the language, as much you can simplify the problem itself. This is why it's about language. The language you use to define a problem is the model that you will use to face the problem itself. If your formulation of the problem is a mess, you'll probably fail because the model you selected is wrong. It's not wrong. It's not the proper one for the goal you have. And again, this seems a complicated statement about something obvious, that is, before starting to reach a goal, define the goal.
Mm-hmm.
You see how obvious it is. But if you neglect this aspect, the induced complexity increases. And in the real life, it's often extremely difficult to distinguish between intrinsic and induced complexity, especially when you are under pressure.
So what you were saying about, in real life, intrinsic and induced complexity, often impossible to fully separate or to even distinguish, I recognize that from communication training, mediation training that I had, how surprisingly hard it is, even in a dry swimming exercise, to create the same mental model between two parties would share the same mental model and describe the problem in between them that separates them, to describe that using the same words, emphasizing the same things. And so when this becomes an even more fine-tuned, lots of factors issue with high technical knowledge required to even enter the conversation, it's a frustrating experience. I see the role of technical writers, even writers, information architects, project managers, similar to that of the mediator, the translator or interpreter. If you suggest that using the methodology and the system of domain-driven design would help us in this mediation, how does one approach this? Does this require an academic approach, a method that you learn and then you try using little by little? Or is there an iterative approach to bringing this into your everyday professional practices?
It's iterative, even surprisingly, because often this kind of methodology works if adopted 100%. In that case, in the case of the domain-driven design, this is not necessary. You don't have to embrace it in the full package of it, because it starts from the core that says that software engineers are not the only people involved in building software. And that's, again, a little bit obvious, but is the pivotal point of the miscommunication between technical people and business people, because very often the process is supposed to be business people say what are the requirements. A business analyst try to digest them and translate in some language comprehensible for technical people, and then software engineers implement.
Mm-hmm.
This linearity is a problem because when you build software, you discover its behavior while developing. And to be sure that this discovery is coherent with the business goals, you need to have next to you business people to confirm that the evolution you are experiencing of your software is okay. So the role of mediators that you are mentioning, of technical writers, information architects, project manager, and so on, is a sort of not only mediators, but only the glue between two kinds of people that often are not able to speak each other. So yes, in terms of language, translators, but in terms of actors of the organization of the project, their role is to force people to stay together in a room and describe what should happen when the software runs in front of the client. A technique to facilitate that, for example, that is coherent with the domain-driven design, is the event storming, where you put together different professionals, mainly a tester, a business person, and a software engineer. And without speaking at all about technology, on a board, they try to describe what should happen, which are the actors using the software, and based on their actions, what should happen. This is a way to build a model that is not far away from the business needs, because you start modeling from what your users do. It may sound strange that something like event storming needed to be invented to put together different skills in the same room. But that, again, is the core of the domain-driven design, and it's the core of the problems in communication in the software projects, that different skills too often love to work separate and have boundaries between people instead of designing logical boundaries of the software. And that's the point. Translate, sure, but technical writer, exactly as the project manager, is not always there where people involved in a software project speak.
Precisely.
So they have to provide a way, a language, a common language to facilitate them. And what I'm trying also in my job to do is to propose little pieces of domain-driven design in the moment when projects are in troubles because of misunderstandings. And every time I try this approach, what I find is that the business standpoint and the technical standpoint diverge because they didn't have a common language to stay together.
What do you do then?
First, by visualizing what is the cause of the troubles. And that's another important learning of the domain-driven design. Visualize. Before creating a language built up of words, you need a language that can be put in a board and be under the eyes of all people. The power of diagrams is sometimes surprising because when you diagram, you abstract your language. You abstract the way you represent the model, because the model becomes just square lines and a few words that connects what you are visualizing. So the first approach is, let's visualize. We are not understanding each other. Let's try to simplify what we are not understanding. And then you transform your visualization in events, something that is supposed to happen in the software. And then who is responsible? Who, in terms of system software, is responsible for this happening? The user click a button on the front end. This starts a process. Behind the scene, what is the software process that is responsible to take charge of the press button in the front end? You can see while I'm speaking that I always end up with something obvious, because what I'm saying, someone push a button, there must be something responsible to execute the command related to that button. You can be surprised, but this simple link between the customer action and the engine behind the scene that execute that command often is the place of misunderstanding, because the business value of pressing that button completely disappear when a software developer is building the engine that execute commands and has a huge amount of other problems to make it working. That's when the business people should be there and help the software engineer to stay focused on the business. It's not, no one is guilty of nothing. It's a matter of stay focused on the business, even when the technical problems are overwhelming. And are in contrast with your deadlines, are in contrast, in conflict with the commitment you had. Again, to be effective under pressure in this situation, you need to have interiorized language that makes you able to speak between technical and business people. Mm-hmm. And the domain-driven design provides it.
DDD has a very specific expression they use for that language that you very carefully avoided, but let's bring that in. So DDD talks about the ubiquitous language that is basically a shared mental map, in my understanding, put into words, into a vocabulary. That sort of holds the threads of every stakeholder. The way I imagine this is that even if all the stakeholders are looking at the same space, the mental model they have is a projective based on their perspective. And even though they are looking at the same thing, they're going to draw a different thing. And when you ask them to draw their projection, you need several of them together and somebody who comes in with this sort of neutrality of, all right, folks, but do you realize that you're looking at the same space? You're operating in the same space, you're looking at the same space, you're just standing at different points of the same space. So let's agree on which projections are we going to use to talk about this or this or this. So when that comes up, what projections we talk about. This is how I imagine this in very layman words.
And that's exactly what it is. Because imagine you have the model of your problem to solve. The first thing you have to do to model is to design boundaries between the different contexts of your problem. It's exactly the same as designing a map. Mm-hmm. You trace the boundaries between countries, and in each country, there is a language. To indicate something in France, the word is different compared to the US word, but it can be the same. That's the ubiquitous language. Ubiquitous inside defined boundaries. Mm-hmm. A boundary is a subsection of the business. So the stakeholders that are interested in the subdomains of the business that what is called the bounded context phase should understand this language. And within these boundaries, there is no ambiguity of the about the words of the ubiquitous language. The next step is that the software must speak the same ubiquitous language of the boundary context in which it is developed. That means that when a developer explains a problem to a stakeholder, the words the software developer uses to explain the problem to the stakeholder must be comprehensible for the stakeholder, because the software has been built and designed using exactly the language of the stakeholder.
So very practically, this boils down to, for example, the API endpoints being named with the words that you already agreed on.
And API in particular are absolutely crucial because they are the interface toward the business. So to explain how should be a process in which APIs take a part, you need to have a language that the API users, but not only the API users, also the end users mm-hmm. of the API must understand. For sure, this is not possible. It's not possible to have the same language in each part of the software when the software is, for example, a huge CMS, for example, or something like administrative software that covers many areas of the business. But each area has its own language, and this language should be the same used to formalize the software itself, so that the model of the software mirrors the model of the business. That's a way to reduce the induced complexity, because your effort is in maintaining coherent the language that describes two facets of the situation, the technical facet and the business facet. Mm-hmm.
If a technical writer would feel the drive to get into this and represent this understanding in a meeting where they are, well, defining the problem space, how does this not become the most ungrateful hat to be worn in the room?
You need to sell your position, and you can do that by focusing on the venue that all the people must bring to the customer. It's easy to forget it, but it's the North Star. If to remember people that they are there to solve a problem, not just to invent solutions, mm-hmm. is a problem, it's because the focus on the customer has been lost. Mm-hmm. But we work for our customers. So usually this simple sentence is enough to be not hated because you point out that sometimes the problem has been forgotten mm-hmm. because of the attention, the unique attention to the solution. Mm-hmm. That's a way. The approach is always the same. Keep it simple. When something is struggling, it's because the language we are using to express it is not enough expressive to allow all the people around the table to understand it. And so you have to simplify. But the maximum simplification is we need to deliver value. Mm-hmm. If we are speaking about something that is not connected with that need, we are doing something wrong. So we have to sit down and reflect to the fact that we are no longer serving our customer, but we are speaking about philosophy. That's usually, it's enough. Mm-hmm.
What is your latest challenge in the field? Or in practicing domain-driven design methods?
Convince people that be precise with words is mandatory. That mm-hmm. you cannot call something in a way and in another way in the same situation. If something is called A, it's A, not A, and sometimes B, and sometimes C, and sometimes D, because all we know that we are indicating the same thing. That's it seems a little it may seem a detail, but if you think that you speak a lot during the day and the efficiency in communication is about in technical communication for sure, not in general, but in the technical communication is about the precision of the words you use, it's crucial to be precise. But often again, because of the pressure, because of the rush, because of culture, people don't like to be precise. It seems something that conflicts with the urgency of the problem to be precise. But if you remove precision from domain-driven design, again, you have a mess because the core is to be rigorous in language. And that's the if I had to list the most impacting difficulties in adopting this mindset, because in the end, is before everything, it's a mindset. Then it's a technique, is convince people to be precise in language.
Yes.
It's difficult. I fully understand because my job is to take care of communication. So for me, it's a priority. I fully understand that if you have another role, this is not your priority to be precise when you speak, because you want to get to the result. Mm. And that's why we have to work together. It's not about someone that works better than another. It's about being focused on the most impacting problem in that moment. And often the most impacting problem, surprisingly, is communication, not even the problems that come from the business. Mm-hmm.
And you solve this by sort of mirroring and going back to the language that you already agreed on.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. By mm-hmm. glossaries, diagrams, and a loop in that. Mm-hmm. Meaning I diagram as much as I can. I double check with all the standpoints that the diagram involves. Starting from the diagram, then I write down the glossary of the terms that are visualized. Mm-hmm. In this way, I move from the visualization to the formalization of the problem. Mm-hmm. But the first step is always visualizing.
I really like the way you were talking about precision. My take on that is that precision is a high art form of courtesy towards others. And if we don't practice that, then we need to know that somebody else will have to pay the adjustment price.
Very true. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I agree. And but practicing precision is an investment because at least at the beginning, it slows you down, yes, to be precise. And that's often not acceptable because of business reasons. You have to be fast. So you approximate. And the first approximation that you feel to be acceptable is language. in the end, you don't deliver language, you deliver software. It's a mistake, I know. But if you are in rush, you don't care about language. You care about what your customer will pay, that is software, the service. It's comprehensible, but in the long play, it's a failure because this lose in language precision leads to speak always and always about the solution.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because the solution is what you deliver. You cannot lose focus on the solution because your clients want a solution. Or better, your client will pay you the solution. The software you sell is a solution. But that solution has no value if it doesn't solve available problem.
Let me double back just to be sure. So one of the selling points of using the DDD methodology would be that the customer is in a complex environment. Their problems are intertwined, but with DDD, we may be able to clearly define a problem space, which we can map and then deliver a clearly defined solution that maps to that problem. And therefore, we can claim that we are solving the problem.
Exactly. That's the point.
Mm-hmm. And then we can move on to the next problem.
Exactly. That's the point. Because when you buy something, what you have in your hands is a solution. The solution may be a smartphone, a TV, a Netflix service. All that are the solutions. And so it's comprehensible that it's easy to focus on solution because it's what you pay, it's what you deliver, but it's not the why you pay, it's not the why you deliver. You deliver the smartphone because the value is in communication. So if the smartphone doesn't solve the problem of communication, it's useless.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way, if a service like Netflix is not enough a pleasure because its aim is to entertain people, it could be the best software in the world, but it wouldn't solve the problem that is to be entertained.
Right.
And that's easy with the intuitive services like smartphone at Netflix. In the B2B business, it's less obvious, but the mechanism is the same. You sell a solution for a problem. The solution mm-hmm. is the cost. This is why you pay the solution, because it's a cost. The mm-hmm. value is the problem.
With years ago conversations, as Zdenek Nemec, who is behind the Superface project, he has been advocating for many, many years for a shared domain language as being the prerequisite for autonomous APIs. Well, the field is very loud also about AI and very, very quickly getting adopted. Can you underline this, that having a clearly defined taxonomy, a domain language, is the only maintainable way to involve AI in this?
Not sure that is mm-hmm. the only, but it's a crucial enabler.
Mm-hmm.
Without that, you lose control because in the end, you have to take decisions, building software of any kind. Taking decisions means thinking. Thinking means to put in place a language. If that language is not formalized enough, you lose control of the language, so you lose control of your thinking, so you lose control of your decisions. It's a chain.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure controlling the language is enough. So it's the only silver bullet, but I'm sure that without it, sooner than later, you'll lose control.
Mm-hmm. What is the next big blob of learning that you're planning to do?
Work in progress. For now, I've just started with the domain-driven design. I'm watching all the videos about Europe domain-driven design.
From last year. They recently published it from last year. Yes.
Yeah. It's a sea of knowledge that I have to absorb. So I think that at least for 1 year, I will learn domain-driven design and put in place in my job. Because mm-hmm. because I feel it's much more than a prescriptive method. It's as I said before, it's a mindset that yes. I want to absorb to be able to then go beyond it. But I'm not yet at this level of going beyond. I need to stay with the domain-driven design for some months still.
Mm-hmm. The next conference is going to be June, I think 8-9 is the CAC2 conference track of domain-driven design. It's going to be in Amsterdam. And for that specific reason, actually, we have organized API the Docs Europe, which is now in person. We organized it to be on the 6th, 7th, because we also believe that people who are interested in domain-driven design can possibly, maybe tangentially, maybe directly, benefit from hearing what is said at the API the Docs conference and vice versa. And it's pretty hard to travel recently, so that's why we put them into the same city. So, I hope that that will be to the benefit of everybody. What is the message in a nutshell that you would like to leave our listeners with?
I invite to have respect for words, because we are so used to words, to language, that it's easy to lose the feeling of them. And the fact that a wrong word in an exact moment can lead to a failure. I want to invite people to be aware of is that a word matter. It's not just a sound that is a transient sound that now I say and in a moment will disappear. It's a concept that can become software, that can become business. So that's the message. Words matter. They are not just a way of communicating. They bring with them part of the value of the software industry.
In your blog, you use the expression, words themselves are models, right?
Yeah.
Luca, thank you very, very much. I have to re-listen again and again to also take all this knowledge. Thank you very much for also underlining what people probably believed already and for taking them even further on this journey and introducing some new concepts and solutions here. I hope to see you again soon at one of the conferences or in this podcast. Let's see, like a year later. It's always interesting to hear how people change their directions or their ideas or how they even go deeper into some topics. So thank you again. It was a pleasure and an honor.
My pleasure. Thanks to you. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the API the Docs podcast. We thank our colleagues at Pronovis Developer Portals for letting us work on this, and the entire API community for all of the mutual support and sharing of experiences that you give each other. Do you have a topic or guest that you would like us to spotlight? Drop a note at podcast@pronovis.com. If you go to the website apithedocs.org, you can find the recaps and recordings of past API the Docs conferences, as well as the upcoming program. Until next time, be well.